Welcome to Women in Sustainability, the podcast where we speak with some of the world's foremost female professionals from across the sustainability field, with me, your host, Emily Fripp. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking to Daphne Nissenbaum, the founder and CEO of TIPA, a global compostable packaging company providing innovative solutions for the fashion and food industries. Daphne has had a fascinating career, starting out in software engineering, making her way to become a globally recognised pioneer and female entrepreneur in the global sustainable solution space. In particular, she is passionate about compostable packaging and has now raised over $70 million in the latest funding round for her company, securing TIPA's position as a global leader. Daphne spoke at the World Economic Forum in 2020 and has received multiple awards for her work, including being named as a technology pioneer by the World Economic Forum in 2019. In this episode, you will learn about sustainable packaging innovations and we'll discuss together Daphne's journey to found one of the largest companies working against plastic waste. Good morning and welcome to Africa's Women in Sustainability podcast. Today I'm joined by Daphne Nissenbaum, the founder of and CEO of TIPA, a global compostable packaging company providing innovative solutions for the fashion and food industries. Daphne is leading the charge on international stage for sustainable packaging and named technology pioneer by the World Economic Forum in 2019. So good morning, Daphne. Welcome. It's an absolute pleasure to have you here today to talk to me about your career, your path to where you've got now as part of our Women in Sustainability series. You've got an amazing story to tell and a background. And from what I can see of coming from a sort of software engineering background, marketing, entrepreneurial, various management positions in companies, and then in 2010 founding and sort of setting up TIPA, and now being the CEO of an incredibly successful global sustainability company. So it's phenomenal. But I'm curious, like, how on earth did you get there? Like, what? How did you go from this position of sort of being in those sort of marketing roles and technology to being in such a prominent position and a focus on plastics? Where did that all come from?
Well, first of all, Emily, thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here today. A pleasure to talk to you. Pleasure to share my story. And yes, it is a story. It is a story. It's not obvious. I started my career as a software engineer. That's what I learned in high school. That's what I did in the Army, in the Navy. You know, in Israel, women and men serve full service in the Army. So I was in the software unit and even worked in the software industry for several years. And then I worked in the financial industry. I was a CEO for a research center on risk management in financial markets at one of the universities here in Israel. But one day I had a discussion with one of my children around the plastic bottles they used to take to school back then. And I asked, What are you doing with a bottle post-consumption after you finish drinking? Where is your bottle? Where is your bottle? He said, I threw it away. He said, okay, this is not the right thing to do. We need to recycle, we need to reuse, et cetera, et cetera. And those kind of discussions that I had with my children and around me and surrounding me. And I started to think to myself that there is a problem with plastic. Just remember, it was almost 15 years ago, so it wasn't that obvious that there is a problem with plastic. There is a problem with plastic, and something is not working, and we cannot continue using what we do because we know that plastic is not going anywhere. But I'm not a plastic engineer, I'm not a materials engineer, I'm not a chemist. So I went out jogging, and I thought, as I do every morning, and I thought to myself, okay, what is the most intuitive way to solve this problem? Because we need to pack food. I mean, there's no other way. We need to pack food. But what is the right way to do it? And the first thing that came to my mind was an apple. or an orange, because nature also packed. Nature packed the oranges, the apples, the bananas, etc., etc. Nature does it with compostable packaging. So the idea was to emulate nature creation. And I was innocent, and I thought it's going to be very easy because I knew there are compostable materials in the world. So what's the problem? Let's take those materials, let's pack water, let's replace the water bottles with the compostable drinking pouches, and that's it, end of story. Well, it doesn't work this way, I know this today. I started walking in this path, in this journey of replacing. We started with bottles, then I understood very fast. I mean, right at the beginning, that water bottles are not the main problem of single-use plastic. It's more the more complex packaging, because if maybe one product can be really recycled, it's probably water bottles, but the rest cannot. And then when you start walking in this journey, you understand that I understood that the problem is much bigger. It's a huge one. It's a huge problem. We don't even understand how much. The numbers were out there. But in 2017, around 2017-18, where China decided to stop accepting plastic waste from the rest of the world, the numbers started to be explored. And the recycling rate in the last 30 years is less than 10%. It's around 9%. And it hasn't changed. And when I understood that actually there is a massive problem out there, it doesn't lie in bottles necessarily. It lies in other packaging sections. That's how it all started. So it's hard to do all at the same time. Build a company, develop the solution, protect it, et cetera, commercialize it at a certain stage. But my one thing always kept me walking in this very challenging way is that there is a problem. It's not going to go anywhere if we are not going to take care of it. And, you know, I can talk about it days now, but the core idea is plastic, conventional plastic, lasts forever. We don't know if it's going to be 400, 500, or 600 years. It doesn't really matter. It lasts forever. We need to go back to the raw materials and change it to such raw materials that can be dissolved into nature. And that's what we did. So that's the basic idea. If you ask me, what are you doing? We're emulating nature. What are you doing? We're making sure that nature won't even notice we were here. That's what we're doing.
I find it fascinating because some of the stuff we do when we work with companies and we work, consumer choice and consumer decision making. So when I go into a supermarket, should I be looking for a brand that's got a logo on it to tell me it's been produced sustainably or legally? And given there is a small percentage of consumers who care and try and do the right thing, and that's probably reflective in your 9% of total recycling. It's probably similar to the percentage of people that would go shopping and decide to buy the right products. So in a way, it's part of our challenge that we work with is how do we take it away from being a consumer decision? And it sounds almost like what you're doing with plastics is a similar thing. If everything was just produced and packaged in a way that consumers didn't have to make that decision, it was just made for them, then you'll get a much bigger success rate to some extent. So it's we quite often battle between, are we trying to educate and raise awareness with consumers? And on one hand, yes, it's very important. But if a shopper goes into a supermarket, they've got a limited budget, they've got 10 minutes, 5 minutes to do their shopping, and they've got a list, they're not looking for the sustainable products. And do you see a mirroring in that conversation in some of the work you're doing and trying to get the uptake of compostable plastics within sort of being used by business? Is the business case there? Are they sort of saying, what we find is they say, oh, it's too expensive, we can't possibly do it, nobody's demanding it, nobody's asking for it. And we go, well, actually, as a business, it's your responsibility to make that step change. Does that mirror the conversations, or is it quite different in the compostable plastics sort of world?
I guess it's the same, but let's first clear that the reason for 9% recycling, it's not because of educational side, or maybe a small part of it. The main thing is that the technology doesn't really work. Okay, but you're right. There is an educational part of specifically new technology like compostable packaging. Part of the demand, or let's say it differently, what we're trying to do is we're trying to make a revolution. Okay? We swim against the stream. That's what we do in Tipa, and I can talk about that, but let's take it for a second as a given. We swim against the stream. The stream is recycling. The stream is fossil fuel companies who want to continue to sell the enormous amount of plastic that they do every day, okay? So that's what we do. We cannot educate the market by ourselves. It's not our role, and we cannot do it. We have to do it with the brands. So we sell to brands, and brands sell to end consumers. But revolutions happen from the bottom, from the crowd, from the end consumer. We definitely see, you know, in researchers around the world, that specifically the newer generations, the Generation Z, they understand what compostable packaging is, and there is a demand for specifically compostable packaging. So I believe that's the way it's going to happen. So there are challenges. Wow, there are so many challenges. There are challenges in the side of the technology. That's on us. There are challenges of this on the side of the collection. That's on the government. There are challenges in the side of the end consumers. That's the end consumer's role, et cetera, et cetera. And there are challenges everywhere. Technological, manufacturing, et cetera, et cetera. But the technology works. That's the main thing. The technology works. By the way, you cannot recycle a package by yourself, but you can compost a package by yourself as an individual.
Like that.
So we bring a solution that actually is transparent to nature, right? That's the right thing to do. So nature works. It's a wonderful circular economy system. Let's leave it like that, and let's implement into that. And that's what we offer, right? If there is an educational side, yes, it costs more. It costs more currently. Yeah, it costs a little more currently. But definitely, it's a revolution. It will take time. It's not going to happen in one day. It takes time. And the end consumers play a very important role here. They push the brands. The brands come to us. That's how it works. The brands, you're right, will not come if, not all of them, but the mainstream brands will not come if they won't feel any pressure coming from the bottom. Yeah. But I can definitely say that in the last 10 years that I'm in the business, there is a change. There's a huge change in the awareness, in understanding, in the appetite of brands to lead to revolution and to do something else. And not continue doing the same thing that everybody understands today, that is the wrong thing to do, to use conventional plastic. Like, there's no tomorrow. We can continue using.
Yeah, it's becoming increasingly urgent and increasingly visible, isn't it? Everywhere you go. If we can just come back a bit, because I mean, you have this idea while you're jogging, and which I resonate with. I take my dog for a walk every morning and across the park, and I'm quite often talking out loud to myself, thinking through my daily various conversations. I must look like a right mad woman. But, you get this moment of sort of, okay, this is what I want to do. You've got a software technology background, but you've got finance background. I mean, as I always say to my team, you know, that's fab, but you come back and sit at your desk, and then what do you do? How do you take that idea and turn it into a successful $X million business, global business?
It's a good question, and I've been asked this question, you know, for years now, and I guess for years from now. I think that if you would ask me 10, 15 years ago or 12 years, would you believe that you'd be there? I would say, no way, I'm not. It's not going to happen. I'm a software engineer, I'm finance, and this and that. I had this desire to do something by myself, and you know, I read a few articles on people who made change and the great innovations and stuff like that. And even one article was on women, successful women, and one of them, but it was around people who succeeded. Well, how did they do that? And the woman who succeeded, how and when, and about great innovation. So I can definitely say, if I summarize all that, I knew all of them said that the greatest innovation is just surrounding you, like in the few matters in your surrounding. Just look under your nose. That's a And the great innovation is there. Just look what you miss in your day-to-day life. Look what the surrounding is missing, what the environment is missing, what your family is missing, what's the business missing. I mean, it's someplace around you. The greatest innovation, that's how it can. That's one thing. Second thing is that you have to dream. As an entrepreneur, you have to dream. Now, it's not just a phrase. You have to paint the picture. It has to be here, and you have to look at it every day and say, okay, I'm walking step by step, but this is the horizon, and this is where I need to go, and this is my mission in life to get there. And if you work every day and with all the challenges and the difficulties and the failures, you say, okay, not everybody can do that, but you have to wake up and go there. So and it was clear that people who succeeded in life had this vision in their eyes, like a real picture, not just a real picture, and that's what they worked on to get there. So that's the second thing. And and the third thing, you know, I have to say, as an individual, the first day I took money from my investors, I knew I have to return this money. So there's no other choice. I have to continue doing what I was appointed to do, or what people believed in me, invested in the company. So I will do, and that's what I need to do. If I like it, if I don't like it, if it's challenging, that's what I need to do. So that's to answer on the day-to-day life. How did I find myself with dealing with packaging or waste management, which is definitely not me? It started with a discussion with my children. And when I started to dive in, I understood the size of what we're talking about here, the potential and the challenge.
And did you, you know, you wrote a sort of business plan. Did you know the scientists or people that could help develop the scientific solution, or did you have to go and find people, hunt them down and say, you're going to work with me and we're going to figure this out? Is that
That's exactly what we did. So I connected to the co-founder, we were two. And we started by networking, finding the right people who can help us. And there were different people in different stages of the company. At the beginning, it was that we always made sure that we took the best people. We paid a lot of money for an hourly basis. But to take the best people in the market, to make sure that we come quickly with innovation, that we understand what to do, that et cetera, et cetera. And you know, there are many challenges in the beginning and then different challenges, but I think that one of the things that when you're an entrepreneur and you want to build a business, in order to succeed, you have to build a business. It won't work only from the idea, right? So it has to be a business that makes sense. I think that you have to have the talent of knowing how to manage and how to lead. I mean, leadership and management, I didn't have the knowledge, but I had the understanding to bring the right people and to make them work together with us. And I've been asked many times, specifically when I raised money, how come a person that is not a scientist coming with an innovation that many companies are trying to come with, but how come you? Why you? As a software engineer, will bring a solution. And I always say, my knowledge is how to drive this thing. I'm not an engineer. I don't have a PhD in I'm not a chemist. I'm not an engineer. But I have the vision. I have the passion. I believe in it. And I know how to bring the right people to work with us as a group, because it's always a group. It's not one person. It's never one person. And the evidence, the result, talk by itself.
It's so inspiring, and it is a real reminder of what drives change, what drives business. And you look at any of the great entrepreneurs, of which you're, you know, obviously one of them, and that's exactly where the narrative is. And several people I've come across, and they've said, it's not my job to know the technical detail. My job is to make this happen. And it's great. All I know is I'm hiring or working with you because you guys know this, and I want you to deliver on that. And I want you to deliver on it by a certain time. And I don't need to know any more than that. I just want you to, you know, and he was hugely successful, but there's, you're most of your leading global entrepreneurs would be in that space. I think what's so refreshing is that A, you're a woman, but also you're doing something that you're passionate, believe in, and is good for the environment. Because I don't think there's enough leading women or leading entrepreneurs in this space. And I think doing it from the bottom up is very different to making your millions in a different sector and then seeing the light and trying to save the planet. What I find really inspiring is that it's come from a true belief of something within you. I mean, there must have been challenges. You named some of them, of the sort of, you know, you're up against the plastics industry, which behind that is the oil and gas sector. You know, you've not exactly chosen an easy sector to go up against in your battle for innovation and change. I mean, what were probably some of the biggest challenges you've had to overcome?
Endless challenges. it's not an easy one. There's a technological challenge. There's a shelf life challenge. There's a machinery challenge, because we have to manufacture the product, right? Let me talk about the operational challenge, okay? Because maybe that's the one that I can. Maybe can be kind of open a new idea. So, you know, that's one of my benefits. I'm coming from the software industry. And in the software industry, I always grew, but I grew like this. That's how I was educated in this industry, that you have to do everything very... Software is light, right? Because software can be copied from one to the other very easily, right? And there's a phrase that says viral growth. So viral growth. I develop software and then I copy it over there and they copy it and so on and so forth. And that's like a virus, right? It's a viral growth. And when I established the company, I said to the people, I want to see viral growth here. And they didn't understand what I was talking about. But I said, I don't want to be connected to any machine, any factory, anything. I want to fly. I want to be out there in the sky and make sure that technology is spread everywhere. And there is a challenge of manufacturing. I mean, the packaging industry has a very important role. It actually protects the goods, right? That's what it does. It makes sure that you can manufacture in China and consume in Europe, and et cetera, et cetera. So, and it's not easy for companies to replace the packaging technology because there's a high, they see it as a risk sometimes, specifically in the beginning when we started deploying the technology. But I made sure that, so one of the goals was to develop a solution that is equal to organic materials on one hand, but at the same time equal to conventional plastic. And when I say equal to conventional plastic, it means that it will bring the same properties as conventional plastic, and it will be manufactured the same way as conventional plastic on the same machinery, and this way it can be easily spread around because it's just replacing one material with the other on the same machinery. And then we made sure that we manufacture the first step, which is manufacturing the films on conventional plastic machinery. And the second step of shaping the package called converting, we do this again with conventional plastic machinery. And that's the model. It's a fabless model. And that's how we actually managed the manufacturing challenge. Because we didn't buy machines, we didn't install machines. There's enough. There is a supply chain out there which we want to actually use the same supply chain as conventional plastic. And it's challenging on other things like who will let you manufacture on their machines? Why would they do it? How much it costs? Et cetera, et cetera. On the other hand, it enables us to manufacture everywhere. And that's how it's a small company we manufacture today in Australia, in Europe, and in North America. And we deploy our products there. And if as a manufacturer you want to use our products, we have to have an agreement, but you can do it. And that's a viral growth. That's part of the viral growth. So that's one of the challenges. That's talking about one of the challenges. And that's, by the way, something I'm bringing from a different industry. It's not common in this industry. Bring you from the software industry, but this is, for example, one of the challenges. And there are other challenges, and you're very right when you talk about the fossil fuel companies. So many times I felt, I said to the team, look, we are one David against, like, I don't know, hundreds of Goliaths, right? And we have to understand how, when, and where to throw the stone. And that's a challenge. That's a challenge which we deal with every day. But it's only part of the challenges. You know, sometimes I feel that if I knew all this in the beginning, you know, I hope we would have gone the same way. But it's good that I didn't know all those challenges in the beginning because I'm not sure I was here. But I was here. I was probably here. But I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid from challenges.
Fantastic. So where next? What's on the, where do you go?
Well, there's a lot to go. We're just in the beginning, in the very, very beginning. Look, it's not in the massive market yet, the solution. Once we get to the massive market, I would lie back and say, okay, maybe we did it. We need to grow. We need to sell more. We need to offer more solutions, which our R&D team works all the time on. We need to make sure that the revolution happens. We need to be part of the revolution. We're not the whole region, only part, but part of the revolution. And we want to lead the compostable solutions to say to the world, look, there is a solution. It's ready for use. And it's as good as conventional plastic. Don't be afraid. Go there. Maybe it costs a bit more in the beginning, but everybody can carry this cost. It's a few cents. So that's next. That's next. To make sure that it really grows and really spread it and massively used.
We wholeheartedly support everything that you're doing in your campaign, and as a company, it's so aligned with our values and thoughts and stuff. So we will be watching eagerly looking out for you and making sure we can support where we can. And just finally, because I realise we've been talking for a while now, if you had sort of a couple of words of advice for young budding entrepreneurs out there, what would it be? What would be your final thought to the new generation, or not even the new generation, anyone at any age, who just wants to do something?
There's no age for that. I believe that you have to believe in what you do and stick to it and be always, and at the same time, I mean, stick to your goal and mission, but at the same time, keep your mind open and flexible to the changes that you need to make on the way in order to get to your mission, because that's what it takes. It takes very high level of flexibility to be able to adapt your journey to what's needed in order to get to that, to your goals. And once you believe it, I mean, you have to believe in the solution, in the core of the solution, and that should be your main reason for doing what you're doing. Not anything else, not money, not an exit. But make sure you want to make this change. And that should be your core guidance. Every decision that is taken needs to be taken by looking, that's what I need to get. This is the main thing. Let's make sure the decision serves this goal.
That's incredibly sound advice. So thank you so much for spending the time with us this morning and talking to us and sharing your story, because it's been absolutely fascinating.
Thank you.
Thank you, Daphne, for joining me today. And thank you all for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, don't forget to subscribe, and we hope you can join us soon for another episode. Previous episodes can all be found on our website, www.efica.com, with regular editions.